Warning, this podcast may contain graphic violence, sexual themes, and bad language. If our language offends you, we apologize, but we do not give a fuck. Be mindful of your kids listening.
The Evil Never Dies Podcast.
One man.
So I'm Jerry.
One woman.
And I'm Tracy.
One dog. All of them together for the first time to bring you the number one podcast of the year.
Hey guys, welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories.
They're coming to tell ghost stories and chew some gum. And they're all out of gum.
This is very true.
Hillbilly Horror Stories, now playing on a podcast player near you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for listening to the Evil Never Dies podcast. I'm Brett, here with my co-host Carl, and sorry we've been on a little hiatus the last few weeks, but tonight we're going to do episode 2 of Ronnie James Dio. And starting out with the album Holy Diver. It was released on May 25th, 1983. My birthday. I was 16 years old on that day. And where the hell am I at here? I'm about to edit that out. Start out the lineup, Ronnie on vocals, of course. So for all the rest of this, y'all know Ronnie was singing, so I'm not going to refer to him as being on vocals. So,
well, though there was stuff before this lineup ever got going. At one point, Jakey Lee was supposed to be in the band.
Yeah, he actually started it, and they kicked him out 6 months later, and Vivian Campbell came on board. I don't know if they kicked him out.
I was going
to
say,
isn't that when he went to Ozzy?
Yeah, and it was actually Wendy Dio who, I guess, introduced him to Sharon Osbourne.
Oh, really?
So he got the Ozzy gig.
Your video froze up. I don't know what's up with that. But anyway, I still hear you.
We're not using the video anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, Vivian Campbell came on and came from a band called Sweet Savage. And actually, did you know the song Caught in the Middle, the main riff was from his band. It was from a song called Straight Through the Heart, which is also a song on the Dio album, on the Holy Diver album.
That's true.
I didn't know that. And we had Jimmy Bain on bass and Vinny Appice on drums. It was, what's that?
Well, of course, Jimmy Bain played in Rainbow. That's where they first met.
Yep. And it was recorded at Sound City in Los Angeles and mastered at Sterling Sound in New York City. It went gold September 12th, 1984, and platinum on March 21st, 1989. Then they remastered it in 2005 and then again in 2012. What's your favorite song off that album, Carl?
Nah, probably I'd say Holy Diver, Don't Talk to Strangers.
Yeah, my favorite. I like to stand up and shout, man.
I like Straight to the Heart too. So
really, there ain't a bad song on that album. I like them all, man.
Just Rainbow in the Dark has been played too much, but you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah, that was the record company hit or whatever that they, the single they put out. So
that's probably Dio's most infamous song, I guess.
Yeah.
People think of Dio. That's the song they think of.
Yeah.
Your radio people, that is.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Moving on here to the next album is The Last in Line. It was released on July 2nd, 1984.
And of course, a new member of the band.
Yep. Yep. They added a keyboard player. His name was Claude Schnell.
Who was from the band Rough Cut, which plays a role later down the line as well.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. That was recorded at Caribou Ranch, Colorado. And Ronnie produced this album. It was the first one he produced. And they mixed and mastered it at Sterling Sound in New York. And, remember the video for The Last in Line?
Those videos all sort of run together. He had some weird videos.
With the curly-haired kid riding on the bicycle.
Okay, yeah. Those Dio
videos. And the elevator and all that shit.
He made weird videos. Like
that was directed by Don Coscarelli.
Yeah, it did
Phantasm.
The only Dio video I like was from the next album, which would have been Rock and Roll Children. But, like, what was the video where there's some guy running around in a suit? Is that Rainbow in the Dark?
I think Holy Diver.
Well, one of them, it doesn't fit the song whatsoever.
Yeah, they're
so.
Yeah,
Dio was not known for very. This is some really weird videos at the time.
Yes, he was, but they were sort of cool though back then for the 80s, man. Shit.
I don't know.
I liked them.
I never understood the videos there at that point.
Yeah, I like that. Coscarelli did a good job on that Last in Line video, though. There's some pretty good special effects and stuff in it. All right, moving on. Third studio album, Sacred Heart, released August 13th, 1985 on Warner Brothers. The cover art for that one was by Robert Florizak. And oh, I forgot. And that was the last album that had the demon dude on it. Do you know he had a name?
His little demon character?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Murray or something like
that. Yeah, Murray. I never knew that. All right. This was the last album with Vivian Campbell. And
things started kind of going to. What I first heard of, about the Dio band is Ronnie wanted to make it a band, but by this point it was becoming more of him and his wife Wendy, who was like Sharon Osbourne Jr., more controlling things. And I think that's when Vivian Campbell was starting to get a little upset if you listen to Vinny Appice and Jimmy Bain before he passed away, they even said that Vivian probably had some actual complaints about the money. They just weren't getting paid, what they were told.
Yeah.
So
they thought they should be getting paid.
But they shot. So, and again, I don't want to knock on Dio, but it was his band, but he said that it was supposed to be a band, not a solo project. And unfortunately, by the time this album rolled around, I think it was starting to come to light that it was really Ronnie's band. Well, Vivian wouldn't even finish the tour out.
Yep.
He was gone, in the middle of the tour.
Yep.
I think he played the first leg of the Sacred Heart tour, and then he was fired.
Fired. Yeah, I've always heard that Wendy Dio wasn't very easy to get along with.
That's from what it sounds like, which would explain a lot of the movement in and out of the band, I think, after this point.
Yep.
But I do really like that album. I think I almost like it better than the first two.
The Sacred Heart.
Yes. But Rock and Roll Children just always been a special song to me. And Ronnie's even said it's one of his favorite songs he ever wrote. And again, talking about the videos, I thought that video finally sort of fit the song. He finally had a hit there with me. Hungry for Heaven's a good song. King of Rock and Roll. A lot of.
Yeah, that's my favorite one off that.
Rumors what that song was actually about. Who knows?
Yeah, that's when he had that tour was when he had the big tour set up with the big dragon. And
oh my God, it was the most epic tour ever.
Yeah.
I've actually got the, originally it was I think I still have it up there. It was just a VHS tape. And I guess it was cut, it was edited, but now they've actually re-released it on DVD, and it's got the whole concert. And definitely that was the top tour. I mean, he had everything going.
Yeah, they were like the first one. He was like the first one to use the four different colored lasers and all that.
Yes. Kind of shit. The dragon moved around and.
Yeah, it was animatronic.
He had smoke coming out of him, and Dio actually slayed him at the end of the concert. The dragon had a name, but his name Ronnie had a different name than everybody else. But I did hear that the dragon finally died like at the very end of the tour, and he never woke up again.
Oh, yeah. After he killed him the last time?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was in Japan or something. He finally.
Slayed the dragon in Japan.
But I don't know if on the list that they did release a short live album from that tour that Vivian actually played on. The Intermission EP.
All right. Where are we going here?
The song Time to Burn was on, which was the first that featured Craig Goldie.
Yep.
Now, Craig Goldie also came from the band Rough Cut. And yep. Fascinating enough, he replaced J.K. Lee in Rough Cut. So that band Rough Cut had a lot of ties to Dio, and the tie, Wendy Dio managed them. So seemed like that was almost kind of like a farm league for the Dio band right there. But yeah, in the middle of the tour, in walked Craig Goldie.
Yeah.
Replace Vivian.
All right. Next one is Strange Highways.
Nope. You missed something.
Did I miss something?
Yeah. You missed the best album ever did, Dream Evil.
Oh, here we go.
Fourth studio album from Dio.
Papers fucking mixed up here.
Well, you're.
Well, didn't they do the Intermission before that?
Yeah. I just mentioned it.
Yeah. I didn't really like that album. That for a live album,
it was more of an EP. I think introduced Craig Goldie because the song "Time to Burn" was on there, which was a very radio song, and I think it was from some movie soundtrack. But yeah, it was just kind of a throw out there. But yeah, fourth album was actually Dream Evil.
Yeah, Dream Evil. It was released on July 21st, 1987. Recorded at Village Recordings in Los Angeles, produced again by Ronnie. They mixed it at the Record Plant in Los Angeles, mastered in New York at that Sterling Sound again. And the cover art was by Steve Houston. Illustrated. Yep. And that was the last album to have the Murray character on the album.
And Craig Schnell as well, or Claude Schnell, the keyboard player.
Yep.
Also, that's the only album, if you turn the Dio logo upside down, it actually does spell devil too.
Yeah, it's on the outside of it or whatever.
If you just turn it upside down and it says devil. The other everybody said it said devil, but this one they actually did it. I guess it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek joke. I don't know.
Just to make everybody, to make it right, like everybody was right.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that was a good album. I just got out of the Army when that album came out. Like the week I got out of the Army, it came out.
That's was probably, and still to this day, my favorite Dio album. Just yeah. The whole album is from start to finish is great. All the Fools Sailed Away is one of Ronnie's best songs he ever wrote.
Yeah, I know. I love that song. And I like that Night People, too. That's an awesome song.
And by this point, you know, my gripes about the music videos have totally been righted. I mean, some of the best videos ever made were from that album, music videos.
Yep.
Not really a bad song on that album. And same like Craig Goldie was more of a Ritchie Blackmore type than Viv ever was. Vivian Campbell almost felt to me like he was, you know, the young, you know, shredder, whereas Goldie was more like a kind of in the Ritchie Blackmore tone to me. And you could tell it in the album. Had a different sound to it by far than the other three.
Yeah, yes, it did. It really different. It was like, yeah, when I first heard it, I was like, wow, this is different, you know, really different.
Yeah, I think Craig Goldie made a big difference on that. Not saying that he was any better or any worse than Vivian Campbell. I thought they were both great guitar players. And, you know.
All right, on to Lock Up the Wolves.
If we have to. That's where everything goes straight to hell.
Yep. It was released on May 15th, 1988. Yeah, 88, yeah. And they recorded this one at Granny's house. And mixed and mastered at the Battery Studios in London.
Yeah, it came out in 1990. I remember that.
Was that 1990?
Yep.
It was 3 years later?
Yep. Lots of touring and lots of member changes.
Yeah, that's when he got rid of why'd Craig Goldie leave?
You know, I've tried to find out and I never could find an answer to that other than Craig Goldie said he wanted a solo career, which I actually own a CD somewhere here that was Craig Goldie's Ritual. Pretty good album. So I don't know what happened. I mean, I think it goes back to money. I don't think Ronnie was paying these guys what they thought they were worth.
Yeah.
I know that Claude Schnell keyboard guy had been offered to join Journey at one point, and Ronnie kept him around and promised him solos and stuff in Dream Evil, which there are on the songs. Like All the Fools Sailed Away has a keyboard, you know, solo.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess things were starting to just not really.
Yeah, they got that 19-year-old kid, Rowan Robertson or whatever his name is.
And then, of course, I think we skipped over the fact that Vinny Appice disappeared, too, at this point. He's gone.
Yep.
Jimmy Bain's the only one left of the original band.
Well, Jimmy Bain wasn't on that album either. It was a guy named Teddy Cook that they hired.
I thought Jimmy Bain played that album.
Not according to Wikipedia.
Well, maybe Wikipedia ain't right.
And then they had Simon Wright on the drums from AC/DC. He's an awesome drummer, man.
Actually, he really is a good drummer, but it was a real disappointing to see Vinny leave after all the years that Ronnie and him had worked together, but solid drummer.
Yes, he was. Far. Yes, he is. Is he back with AC/DC now?
No, he's not.
I didn't look up to see where the hell he went, but
I don't know where the hell Jimmy Bain went, but I know for a fact he wrote a lot of the songs on that album. I don't know. Something went to hell with that whole album. I'll be honest, I don't like that album very well. I've tried to like it when it came out, and it was a big disappointment to me. Honestly, that's one album. The song Lock Up the Wolves is
That's okay. That's probably the best song on the whole album.
And Jimmy Bain actually, I think, wrote that song or was co-writer on it. But that Rowan Robertson kid,
maybe he wrote there, because there was two songs that was written. One was called Hell Wouldn't Take Her and The River Between Us. And I guess Wendy Dio scrapped them. I wonder if he's the one that wrote them. That's why he fucking left.
I don't know. I don't know why Jimmy Bain. I just know, like I said, going back to when Vivian Campbell left, those guys weren't happy with the monetary income that they were promised. But yeah, it was a very disappointing album, especially for me, because I was such a big Dio fan, and it just wasn't what I expected. And to this day, it's just not an album I listen to. I sort of skip over
it. There's only a couple songs I like, the main song, and then that I like that Hey Angel. That's an okay song.
It don't even sound like it belongs on a Dio album to me.
It's pretty mellow, but
I don't know where they found that kid at, but he didn't last.
I couldn't really find nothing on him either.
No, I never. He's still around, but he never really, had a lot more.
Really amounted to much.
No. Whereas Simon Wright, he was in a band called Rhino Bucket after he left AC/DC.
Oh, he's in Rhino Bucket, huh?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Then I think Chris Slade replaced him in AC/DC. And then, of course, Phil Rudd finally came back. But, yeah. That was pretty much the end of the Dio band at that very moment.
Yep. Exactly. All right. Now we're on to Strange Highways. Man, it was released.
You missed something again.
Missed something.
There was like a reunion with Black Sabbath. You totally missed.
Oh, I was just doing the Dio albums. That's when he went back to what they did the reunion tour. It was after that.
1992, I believe. It was after Lock Up the Wolves.
It was right after that, huh?
Yeah.
They did a live album for that too, didn't they?
For Dehumanizer?
No, for the reunion.
Dehumanizer was the reunion.
And I thought they did an album called Reunion too.
That was with Ozzy. You're totally in La La Land. What the hell, dude? Yeah, there is an album called Reunion. It's done with Ozzy.
Okay.
Black Sabbath. The reunion with Dio was called Dehumanizer. It came out in 1992, and Vinnie Appice came back somehow, and I'll tell you why if you want to know.
Well, tell me. I'm fucking curious.
You're all jacked up. You're like doing reunion tours with Ozzy here. So I was a big fan of the 80s Sabbath. I really liked them. Yeah. Especially the album Headless Cross. I thought that album was absolutely underrated and should have got a lot more credit than it did. But somewhere along the line, Tony Iommi brought in a Cozy Powell, who played drums with Rainbow and a bunch of other bands, to try to bring some stability to Black Sabbath. Mm-hmm. Because, they kept changing. I don't even know who played bass on Headless Cross, but, Cozy Powell, Tony Iommi, well, people knew who they were. So when they got to Dio and Geezer Butler met somewhere, I think Geezer may have came to a show, and they just kind of was chilling backstage. And I guess that started talk of, hey, Ronnie, why don't you come back into the fold? And there you go. But at the time, Cozy Powell was supposed to be the drummer, but he fell off of a horse and had an injury. So Ronnie wanted to bring his drummer, which was Simon Wright, into Black Sabbath, but Iommi didn't hear nothing of it. He's like, nope, let's get Vivian back if we're going to do it. And just, basically we'll have the Mob Rules line up back together. And I don't think the sessions went real well because at some point Tony Martin claimed he was back in the studios with them. And there's a lot of talk behind that album as far as, you know, what was going on with it. But nevertheless, it is an absolute epic Black Sabbath album.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, one of the best. You know, you got the, what was the song?
So did they always think that was going to be just a one-off? And the,
no, or there was never any talk. It was, you know, they when they got together, I think.
They thought they were going to be back and
they thought they were going to be back and stay together. But it all went to hell whenever somebody had the bright idea to have Black Sabbath open for Ozzy Osbourne on his farewell tour, the No More Tours tour. And I guess Ronnie caught wind of that and he wasn't very happy. Now, I think it was, he was told in the middle of the tour that they'd be opening for Ozzy. And, you know, he felt like that him, Ronnie, and Black Sabbath should have more pride than opening for their ex, you know, lead singer. So Ronnie pulled out of the concert. And
I don't blame him.
And so the show went on and they brought in Rob Halford to sing for Black Sabbath. Which, if you ever hear any of those bootlegs, is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of them. I've seen a couple of videos on YouTube.
So
it was different for sure.
Rob did his thing, and then I guess Ozzy brought them all up on stage and boom, the Black Sabbath reunion supposedly was about to happen. But it didn't for a while. And I think Ronnie kind of saw the writing on the wall there, you know, well, if you're going to get Ozzy back, then obviously this project we're doing ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So Ronnie and I guess Vivian played the tour, the one show, and then he hooked him and went back with Ronnie. And thus Black Sabbath was not reunited with Ozzy. They were back reunited with Tony Martin on Cross Purposes, and Ronnie and Vivian started the Dio band back again. So now back to your notes.
Is it Strange Highways now?
It should be about 1994.
93.
And that would be Strange Highways.
Okay.
So back to your notes there, Mr. Brett.
It was released on October 9th, 1993. And then...
That makes sense. I was close. I thought it was 94.
That was in the UK. 94, January 12th was in the US.
Oh, okay.
So it was 94. You were half right.
I'm half right. I just know that after that, you know, at the time when The Humanizer came out, I didn't think a lot of it. But years later, I've grown to really love that album. It's one of my favorite albums of the whole Black Sabbath band. But I was glad when Dio got back, the Dio band, and Strange Highways came out.
That was the first album with, Tracy G played guitar on that album, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And Jeff Pilson from Dokken played and actually wrote some songs on it.
And Pilson played keyboards too on it, I guess.
Yeah, I think for the tour, they brought in a guy named Scott Warren who would actually stay with Dio until he died. He never left the band. He actually played in some of the, I think, the Sabbath reunion, that guy.
And, of course, Vinny was back on drums.
And in my opinion, Strange Highways is basically The Humanizer Part 2. And I actually did a little bit of research for this because we were talking about this.
Yeah, and yeah.
The song Hollywood Black was actually demoed with Black Sabbath in the studio. And Iommi said he remembered the name, but he didn't think it was the same music. So this is a very heavy Dio album. Very intense.
Yes, it is.
It sounds more Sabbath-y than it does Dio band. Great album. I still listen to it a lot.
Didn't he get with Tenacious D on that one? They did the Pain video.
I don't remember that. No, Not to my knowledge.
The Pain on that album, no.
There's a song called Pain on the album, but I didn't know there was a video.
They did a video of it. And
I thought that
Tenacious D and Jack Black are in it, and they're like on the street corner fucking there with acoustic guitars singing Heaven and Hell.
I think you got the wrong song. Because that there was a they were in a video called Push.
Push. That's
from Killing the Dragon.
Yeah, that's on Down the Road. Yeah.
Boy, your notes are jacked there.
No, I didn't have that on them notes. I just
you were close. It's the song's called Push, not Pain.
Anyway,
Tracy G should get a lot of credit. That guy.
Yeah, he's awesome. A good guitarist, man.
I would say I'd put him about number in the top of Dio's guitar players. Dude shreds.
Yeah, it is.
And it was a great album.
Yeah, I like that album.
I think I actually saw that concert, I believe.
All right. Now we're on to Angry Machines.
Yeah. I watched an interview with Ronnie that was done prior to this, and him talking about, well, the 90s are a different time, and you know, things are cutting kind of dark and negative, and you know, I don't really want to sing about dragons and rainbows anymore. You know, it's kind of time to get more modern, you know. And did he ever? The whole Angry Machine album is just basically almost like a freaking mid-90s grunge album. But you got to remember, this album came out what year? 96?
Yep, October 4th in Japan.
That was when classic, you know, heavy metal and hard rock bands were at their lowest in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, well, the grunge fucking movement.
Maiden had Blaze Bailey playing at Deep Ellum Live. Priest had Ripper. They were playing at the Bronco Bowl. And Ronnie was playing clubs. It was just a real dark time for classic metal, from, you know, especially bands from the 80s. And Dio fell on some pretty down times. And I honestly think Angry Machines is probably the bottom of the barrel. I mean, he was trying to sound modern. You know, he was trying to make the changes that were needed, but it just didn't work. And that was Vinnie Appice's last album as well. After that, it was just sort of like, you know, what's next? I mean, is there even going to be another Dio album? I haven't ever heard Ronnie's comments on that album, but I think he made it more out of necessity, trying to be modern, and it just did not work. I can't even name one song off that album except for one that I do, and that's the one called This Is Your Life.
Yeah.
That song did not come into any kind of play until after Ronnie passed away.
Exactly. Everybody started putting on the tribute videos, yes, and all that. Yeah.
But Angry Machine is not, it's just, it really isn't even a Dio band album. It's just, it was just there. I think it was the seventh album, and it just sort of came out at a bad time. And Ronnie tried to be modern, and it just didn't work. That's my opinion of it. You may have a different one. Even the artwork looks crappy on it.
They had a totally different guy do the artwork on that one.
Look real cheap on it. I hate to trash on anything, but that album's just not a good album. It and that darn old Lock Up the Wolves are just my two least favorite albums.
Yeah, and that was the last album, the last studio album that Vinny was on, too.
Yes.
And then
I guess there was two versions.
There was the Japanese version that had 11 tracks on it. There was a song on there called God Hates Heavy Metal.
Oh my Lord.
And
cliche.
And they didn't put it on the US version until they did they remastered it in 2019, and then they put it on there then.
Yeah.
And then there was a second, when they remastered it, they had a second disc of all kinds of live stuff of the tour.
Yeah, and the tour wouldn't have been bad. It still had Tracy G on guitar. Really liked that guy.
Yep, and Pilsen was still on bass at that time, too.
Possibly. Pilsen, I know on one of those tours, he did the album, but not the tour, but I don't remember which one.
Jeff's a busy man.
Yeah. Jeff's a busy, busy man.
Wasn't that the year that he made that movie with Mark Wahlberg, the take on Rockstar? Isn't that the year he made that movie?
Could have been. I don't remember what year.
He was in that.
Yeah, him and Zach Wilde and Jason Bonham, a lot of people were in that movie. Yeah, good movie.
Your video's back up now. What the hell happened?
I don't know.
Hit a button or something.
I haven't touched anything. You're going to have to edit this thing really good.
Oh, I know. Or I might not. Who fucking knows? All right.
Let's see where we're at next here. If you're in the right order here.
The live album, The Inferno, The Last in Live.
Yes, there was a live album in between.
Yeah. They recorded that on that Angry Machines tour.
And from
I've never heard this album, I don't think.
I'm sure that I've got it.
It was released in 98.
I would have had it on CD for sure because I would have bought it, I know. But I've got so many live Ronnie James Dio band, whatever you want to call
it. Well, I guess he did live albums. He did a fucking 10-minute version of Mistreated from Deep Purple on this album live. Which I would fucking love to fucking hear that. I looked it up on Spotify and I couldn't find it. This album ain't on there.
What was it called?
Inferno, Last in Live.
I'm looking on my thing here. I probably have the CD somewhere. I don't know that I've got it on iTunes.
And Tracy G played guitar on that.
You know what? That you're talking about the Angry Machines remake or remaster. That album is on there, actually. Yep, it's on there. Now, what song was it you said?
On the Angry Machines?
Yeah.
God Hates Heavy Metal.
No, the live song.
Oh, Mistreated by Deep Purple.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you'd find that on that Angry Machines, I think, remaster.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. I'd like to hear that. And they had some guy named Larry Dennison playing bass on that album.
Yeah, I think that's when Pilsen bowed out for the tour.
I guess he was the bass player for the Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
I don't think he'd be considered a member of the Dio band.
He was just a touring bass player.
Filling in, hired
hand.
Yeah.
And then a guy named Scott Warren on keyboards and Vinny on drums.
Scott Warren had been there for a while by then.
Yeah, I've never heard that album.
I didn't even know that album had keyboards on it, so I don't know what Scott Warren was doing. I'm sure live he had a lot going on, but.
Yeah. All right. Magica.
There we go. That's when the Dio band was reborn and was back headlining big venues. And
dude, I couldn't get into this album, dude.
I don't know why. It's like classic Dio. It's all dragons.
And yeah, I know, but
people, robots and wizards and sorcerers. It's just absolutely. It was Dio.
It was definitely a concept album.
Oh yeah, from start to finish.
Basically, it was about good versus evil.
Craig Goldie came back for that album. That was a big thing.
Yep. Jimmy Bain was still on bass.
He wasn't still on bass. He came back.
Yeah.
This was a big reunion. He brought back Craig Goldie, Jimmy Bain. Unfortunately, Vivian had left, but Simon Wright was here. And of course, Scott Warren was sticking around.
But Jimmy Bain didn't tour on that tour, though. They had another bassist, a guy named Chuck, Chuck Garrick.
Yeah, he's Alice Cooper, one of his bass players.
And Simon Wright was back on drums.
Tracy G had left, and from what I was told somewhere along the line, he was asked that he could stay around, but he would have to play rhythm guitar while Craig Goldie took the lead. So obviously, Tracy G decided to leave at that point.
I wonder how that would have... Maybe with that album, a rhythm guitar player would have sounded good on it, but...
I don't know. I think he was just...
There's only like one song on that album I liked.
That whole album is absolutely classic. I mean,
Lord of the Last Day, I like that song.
But I will tell you this. I saw the concert live. It was Sebastian Bach was one of the opening bands. And Sebastian was at the height of his popularity because he just done the Phantom of the Opera and some other, I think Jesus Christ Superstar. So Sebastian was rolling at that point. Had a really good band. I mean, he just absolutely was. I can't tell you how great Sebastian was opening. Ronnie come out, and they played a couple songs, and he said, "Everybody, we got a new album called Magica, and we're gonna play it now from start to finish." And everybody in the audience was kind of like, "Okay." And I like the album. I love the album. I knew the album, but I'm gonna tell you, by the middle of this album, the crowd was gone. I mean, they didn't leave. They were just totally tuned out after Sebastian had, kicked the ass. And
yeah.
People just didn't want to hear this album from start to finish. But Ronnie, obviously, he'd been playing it on the whole tour.
Where'd you see that at? Where was that at?
I don't remember now. It was at a bigger venue than I saw him the last time. I think the Magica story was good. I could see where a lot of people just, because it's definitely a concept. It's hard to just go in there and listen to one song. It kind of all fits together. I mean,
well, that's what it is. It's a story. The whole thing's like a story.
It is a story. Yeah.
Sort of like Queensryche. What do you call it?
Operation Mindcrime.
Yeah, Operation Mindcrime.
But Craig Goldie, there's a song called Not About Love. And you talk about just a freaking Deep Purple sounding blues song. I mean, Craig Goldie just totally is awesome on that song. It's a ballad, but it just sounds more Deep Purple-y than anything. But anyway, yeah, the whole tour, they did the whole album and people weren't real happy with that. They wanted to hear fucking... Rock and Roll Children and Sacred Heart. And when they finally got to the end, he played a couple of the hits and then that was that. So I think that might've influenced later down the line when Judas Priest did the album called Nostradamus. They were wanting to play that from start to finish live, but maybe they kind of looked at what happened with Ronnie when he did Magic Alive and the audience just, you got a lot of these people that come to see the hits.
Well, he was. You got people. Yeah. Well, there were supposed to be two more Magica albums after that too. He was had stuff in the works for it.
Well,
he was going to make it a trilogy.
It was going to be a trilogy, but somewhere along the line, it got detoured.
Yeah.
And that's where Killing the Dragon came from.
Yeah.
And that's where things start getting weird with the Dio band again. We start getting people just magically disappearing, and this time it would be Craig Goldie. So next up is Killing the Dragon.
Killing the Dragon. It was released on May 21st, 2002 on Spitfire Records. And I guess Ronnie, this album was the Dragon was technology and computers, like computer shit in general, he said a computer is a small god with an electric heart and it's time to rebel against it is a quote that he made about that.
Lyrically, I don't know where that really fits in, but
yeah, that's Craig Goldie left. And I guess he wrote some of the music on that album though.
Craig Goldie wrote the music and was starting on the album. And then he just magically disappeared. and they brought in Doug
Alton. I wonder who had something to do with that. Possibly somebody by the name of Wendy.
I don't think so. I think
you don't think it was Wendy that.
No, that they said there was. I've read a lot of from Craig Goldie, and it wasn't. He left on good terms. It wasn't.
Oh, he did.
It was. He had some kind of problems or something. I could probably find it and tell you the whole story. It's probably not that interesting, but Craig left, and they brought in the greatness of
Doug Aldridge.
Doug, great guitar player. Yeah, that guy's. I'll probably say right now, Doug Aldridge may have been the best guitar player that Ronnie ever worked with. That guy's just great.
Who did he play with before that?
He's been in every band you can think of. He was in some band called, I forget what the hell his name was originally. No, it wasn't a big band, but he was known. But yeah. He joined Hurricane. I don't even know if you remember Hurricane.
That sounds familiar.
And then from there, he just started kind of climbing the steps. And about I guess like, he's probably about like
Rudy Sarzo.
No, nothing like Rudy.
Oh,
Rudy started big. This guy started in like a small band and worked his way up. But
I was just saying, playing with everybody, you know, Rudy's fucking played with everybody.
But he's known for being in Whitesnake for a long time. Him and Coverdale put a lot of good music out together. And he came in and kind of finished up whatever Craig Goldie had on Killing the Dragon. And they put out a darn good album. And now this is where your song Push is in.
Yeah,
and the Tenacious D come along. So yeah, that's the song Push, and the video is fun to watch.
And Jimmy Bain, this was his final album with Ronnie.
Yeah, Scott Warren and Simon Wright would stick around.
Yep, they were still on it. And that Children, Throw Away the Children, had the King Harbor Children's Choir.
Mm-hmm.
In that.
That's a good album.
Yeah, I like that album too.
And I think, again, I think everybody liked, well, not really, everybody respected, let's put it that way, what he was doing with Magica. But I think Ronnie was smart enough to see that, you know, maybe we shouldn't do Magica 2 right now. Let's kind of throw something a little different in and, you know, get back to Magica maybe next or something. Because I don't think there was a lot of, I mean, I think Magica, it was a great album, great concept.
I don't think it sold as much, though. I think
it was sort of a commercial disappointment. And he thought getting to Killing the Dragon and going maybe, back to more.
Well, he might not have been able to find a record company that was going to fucking produce.
A trilogy of Magica albums. So
yeah.
Killing the Dragon kind of filled that void. And it worked. I mean, I was sort of disappointed that we didn't get Magica 2 myself, but I was happy with Killing the Dragon. Saw the concert, you know, I was at the show, and unfortunately, this concert, it was at the Canyon Club, so he kind of went from back to doing, you know, a little bit theaters back to clubs at this point, so. But it was a good show. It was probably the last time I saw the Dio band live, honestly. Doug Aldridge was there. And I believe I've got an actual DVD from this tour. They played a lot of good songs and good band. It was one of the stronger bands I think he put together.
Yeah, that was I liked that album a lot. Liked it way better than Magica. I don't know. I just couldn't get into that. But
he probably didn't like Nostradamus either.
Yeah, there's a few songs off that I like, but anywho, that's another episode altogether. On to Master of the Moon.
And this is the album I don't really understand. I think this is where Magica 2 might have probably played a better role than Master of the Moon. Just seemed like it was thrown together. And I do believe that Craig Goldie shows back up again.
Yeah, it was released on August 30th, 2004 in Europe, and September 7th, 2004 in the U.S. and North America. And it was reissued in 2019, and this was the final Dio studio album.
Yeah, and it kind of ended on a sad note. That's, I just don't have a lot of good memories about that album.
Yeah, Craig Goldie was back. Jeff Pilson was back.
Simon Wright's still around, and so is Scott Warren.
Yep. And
I think they, if I'm not mistaken, he toured with Anthrax on that tour. And I don't think
Anthrax and some other band. I can't think it was, I'd never heard of them before.
Yeah. But I do know I did not go to that concert for very whatever reason. But I also, here's you a point. I think this is where your buddy Rudy Cesar come in.
Yeah, he played on tour.
Yeah, and this I also have a video of. And there's another note to this. I believe at some point Craig Goldie quit the tour and they had to bring back in Doug Aldridge.
Oh, really?
Because, yes. But not a lot of good memories of this album. It seemed like it was just thrown together real quick. And again, maybe that's where Magic of Two should have came out, but it didn't.
No, and it didn't.
Little would we have known, this would have been the last album from the Dio band.
Yeah.
Because something bigger was in the collaborations at this stage.
Something bigger. Well, then in 2005, he did that movie with Tenacious D, that Pick of Destiny.
I have no knowledge about that whatsoever.
You didn't see that movie?
Didn't even know it existed.
It was like the opening sequence to it. He was sitting on a big throne and.
Know nothing about that.
Yeah, it was. Check out that part of the movie.
I'll pass.
Rest of it was pretty fucking stupid.
Yeah, I don't like Jack Black anyway. But building up to what's next actually goes, I don't know where your notes are at, but Sabbath had put out, I think around 2008, they put out a Black Sabbath, the Dio Years. And they actually put some new songs on that. The Devil Cried was one of them.
This was before they got the Heaven and Hell together?
Yeah, this is before that, and that's what kind of gave them
idea. They started talking the Heaven and Hell back in 2006 is what I read.
They were throwing it around. But, of course, at the time, Black Sabbath was still touring with Ozzy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was kind of a, you know, where do you go here? We're talking with Ronnie. We're putting out a Ronnie, you know, the Dio Years, Black Sabbath, greatest hits album, but Ozzy's still on board. So, you know, what are we going to do? You know, and I remember Iommi and Geezer were also sort of sick of playing the same old songs with Ozzy because Ozzy never changed set list up. They were getting a little bored of that.
And he couldn't very well sing the Dio songs.
No, there's no way. So
that would sound fucking weird.
Well, Ozzy wouldn't have done it. There's just no way. So finally, they decide to come about and do the reunion with Ronnie, and they bring Vinny back, and. Instead of calling it Black Sabbath, they called it Heaven and Hell. Now, there's two different stories as to why they did that. One, Ozzy and Sharon would not allow him to use the name Black Sabbath. Two, according to Iommi, he did not want to use the name Black Sabbath. He wanted to basically use the Dio Years from Heaven and Hell, The Mob Rules. He wanted to play those songs. He didn't want Ronnie playing Iron Man.
Dehumanizer.
Dehumanizer. So, basically, you had Black Sabbath with Ozzy, Heaven and Hell with Dio, but it was all Black Sabbath. So the tour went on, and it was probably one of the greatest moments of my life seeing that concert.
Really?
Yes. I could give a whole story about us getting to that concert, me and my buddies. It took us, we were late. We were actually late. There was a Machine Head opened the show.
Oh,
Megadeth was next, and then it was Black Sabbath, Heaven and Hell, whatever you want to call it. And it took us forever to get there. We got to the arena, which was the Grand Prairie Theater, which is a pretty big place. Got in there to hear Dave Mustaine say, "We're Megadeth, and good night." So we missed Megadeth.
Oh.
But luckily we were there for the big show, and it was absolutely incredible.
It was great. Man, I would have loved to have seen that.
Yes. It was a great show.
Would have absolutely loved to have seen that.
Well, then they came around again.
What year was that? That was 2009, wasn't it?
Not sure on the years at this stage. I do know they came around a second time and was touring with Judas Priest. And that was at the big amphitheater in Dallas, Starplex. So got to see him a second time. And I do think that was the Nostradamus tour, maybe, if we keep bringing that up. But yeah, it was Heaven and Hell and Judas Priest, and they had Motorhead as the opening act.
Oh, that would have been a fucking awesome show, dude.
If you like Motorhead, but that's another story.
I like Motorhead.
Well, we won't talk bad about Lemmy. Lemmy was a god, but he just couldn't sing. But we also got a couple live, we got a live album and a live DVD out of that thing. They actually filmed at Radio City Music Hall. And that came out around 2007. And I've got that in my collection and watch it all the time. All songs, you know, from Dehumanizer and Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell, and great show. It was just, and Scott Warren, the Dio keyboard player at this point, had actually replaced the longtime Black Sabbath keyboard player for some odd reason.
Really? Did not know that.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but yeah, Scott Warren's still with Dio at this point. That guy's loyal. They're loyal to him. So that leads you to your last album you should have on your notes.
The Heaven and Hell album. What was it called?
The Devil You Know.
Yeah, The Devil You Know.
That would be the first and only studio album under the name Heaven and Hell, which was Black Sabbath without Ozzy at this stage.
Yep.
That
was released on April 28th, 2009.
I think 10.
The big hit off of that one was that Bible Black song.
Yeah, I kind of have mixed feelings. That album was... I don't know. I never really got a whole lot into it as much. It just.
That's really the only song I liked off of it.
Yeah. It's it was sort of a strange album. Shit. Yeah. This is an album. I think that one of these days I'm going to go back to it. Kind of like I did Dehumanizer years later. And it's just going to blow me away. But so far that hasn't happened. But, that would have been the last album that Ronnie actually sung on.
Yep.
Again, I don't really have a lot of memories of that album. I know that on iTunes, I actually changed the cover to where it says Black Sabbath instead of Heaven and Hell, and reformatted it to where it fits in with my Black Sabbath collection, because that's where it belongs. Oh. It's by all means a Black Sabbath album.
Oh, that's crazy.
But they would later put out a DVD Blu-ray called Neon Nights, 30 Years of Heaven and Hell, which would have been, I guess, about 30 years since the first album. And unfortunately, that would feature the last concert recorded of Ronnie's.
Where was that? And when was the date on that? You know, I couldn't find it.
I think it was Wacken, or whatever they call that German word.
Because he got diagnosed with cancer in November of 2009.
Let's look up and see when this came out.
Look it up. Look it up.
I don't like it as good as the first DVD they did, the one at Radio City Music Hall. I thought that was a better set list and better song selection. And I think Ronnie sounded better. But of course, at the time, he was starting to get sick.
Yeah. Well, he didn't make it much longer after that.
Well, there's a little more to that story, I guess, that I didn't know until recently. Yeah, that came live in Europe. It came out. When did it come out? It was released on November 10th, 2010 in Japan, as you like to point out. November 16th, I guess, to the rest of the world. It was recorded on July 30th of 2009.
And that was his last concert?
That was the last film concert. I don't know if they did any other shows It's called the last filmed one, so I don't think that was...
Well, after he got too sick, and then he finally passed away.
Well, now,
they were still on tour.
Well, according to Craig Goldie, they had actually started working on the Magica 2 album at some point. And actually a song that came out that was later released that was like the only song for Magica 2 that got done. So I guess before or after he got sick, he was planning on going back and finishing that darn Magica trilogy up. Because I don't know what the fate of Heaven and Hell would have been, the band, because Ozzy was still in Black Sabbath. And, you know, sad to say, after Ronnie passed away, Ozzy came back pretty quick. So it's almost like Ozzy replaced Ronnie, which is sort of poetic in some sort of way, I guess. Because they came back and did the 13 album.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is one song from Magica 2 that got recorded. I can probably find it right here. It was called...
I had seen that. I didn't write it down.
It was called Electric Electra. And that was the only song done from Magica 2. But it ended basically with that, as far as, you know, CD, DVD with that Neon Nights live in Europe.
I wonder if you can get that on fucking Amazon. I'd like to get that.
I don't know. A lot of these DVDs that came out in 90s and 2000s and even 2010s are hard to come by. They cost a lot of money if you can find them.
Yeah, you just got that one. I couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah. Either. That was live. I think it was the Monsters of Rock. There was a concert from 83, which would have been the original band, and then 90s from 87, which was the Dream Evil tour. So I think I might have a live recording from every album they've ever done, you know, tour. I think now it's in the, you know, as the years went by, there's been some kind of release of everything live from every tour they've ever put out.
Yeah, I think so. There's
snippets of, or, you know, remasters they put live stuff out
stuff on the end of it. Yeah, made a second disc or whatever.
I think I could probably pull out.
There's lots of that stuff. There's a big
Last in Line album. I don't know that there's anything live from that ever was released, which is sort of a shame. But I guess since we could mention the bands that came after Ronnie, the Last in Line was one, and the other was the Dio's Disciples.
Yep.
At this point, Last in Line, of course, featured the original Dio band, including that Claude Schnell, the keyboard guy, and I guess he was the first to go.
Which one had the hologram? Or was it the
Disciples? That was Dio's Disciples.
Okay.
The Dio Disciples were Craig Goldie, Scott Warren, Simon Wright, and I think the bass player kind of just, I don't think they had a set bass player. Originally, they used different singers. Ripper Owens was singing. The singer from Lynch Mob was doing some of the songs. But somewhere along the line, they brought out that hologram. That would have been Dio's Disciples.
Okay. I seen a video on YouTube of that. It was creepy, dude.
That didn't come off well. People didn't like that. I know Craig Goldie was, and some of these guys, you know, they'll get on Facebook themselves and start bitching at people. And boy, that guy defended that. You know, we're trying to keep Ronnie's legacy alive and you people need to quit talking crap about it. And he was really pro Ronnie hologram, but I guess Wendy's now decided that maybe it wasn't such a good idea. And she said it probably won't be seen again.
Well, so I wasn't really against it. I just thought it was fucking creepy as shit, man.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the guy's
just the way he moved and stuff, and it was just weird.
I thought they were better when they were using people like Ripper Owens to do the songs myself.
Yeah.
Now the Last in Line band, I mean, of course Jimmy Bain has now passed away as well, so it's just Vinny Appice and Vivian Campbell, and actually they got one of Ozzy's old bass players in the band now. They're still Bob going strong.
Was that Bob Kerslake?
No, Phil Sesorin. I can't think of that. He played on Ultimate Sin.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't really know how you say his last name. He only played on Ultimate Sin and he was gone. But so Last in Line is still an active band, and I see their names listed a lot.
Who's
a lot
singing? Of
the festivals. Some guy they found, a good singer. He doesn't sound like Ronnie, which is sort of kind of what they wanted. They wanted it to sound a little different, but you know, so I don't know if you compare the two, you've got the guys that played with Ronnie at the end versus the guys that started with Ronnie, the ones that are left. Unfortunately, Jimmy Bain's gone. I think I would probably have to go with the Last in Line. And a lot of people hate Vivian Campbell and trash on the guy, but obviously he fills his legacy, and the Dio band was enough to where he wants to do a tribute to it. So got to give him credit for that. He's definitely not doing it for the money. I guarantee to you he's making a whole lot more money in Def Leppard than he is in Last in Line. So
he's still in Def Leppard too?
Yes. Unfortunately for Def Leppard, they're currently hijacked by Motley Crue, who can't tour since Vince can't sing. So their stadium tour is on hijack mode right now. COVID got him last year and Vince got him this year. But yeah, he's still in Def Leppard. Vivian actually had cancer.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting fucking old, man.
Vivian Campbell has been, I think, vilified by the Dio camp. And I don't think he deserved a lot of it. I think the guy, you know, I'm not a fan of Def Leppard. I mean, honestly, I mean.
I like their older stuff, but.
The guy fit Def Leppard perfect. I mean, he's from, you know, he's from England. He jumped in when Steve Clark died. And, you know, I think he found his niche. You know, he was in Whitesnake for a brief period.
Yeah, yeah.
And him and Coverdale didn't get along either. So, I don't know. He's managed to get along with Def Leppard since the 90s, and they haven't kicked him out. So, I don't know. I think Vivian Campbell's gotten a bad rap over the years, and I think he deserves a lot more credit than he's got. Craig Goldie was a good guitar player, too. Tracy G was good. And that damn Doug Aldridge is also top-notch. So, Ronnie played with some of the best guitar players going back. And let's not forget Tony Iommi and Richie Blackmore.
Yeah.
So, Ronnie played with some damn good guitar players.
He had a good run, man.
Yeah, he did. He certainly did. He
had a very good run.
You know, it's hard. You know, he made it with Rainbow. You know, he made it once big. And then, you know, come back and with Sabbath and have a second run. I mean, that's unheard of. And, you know, by God, when the Dio band got going, he, you know, hit it big for the third time.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of people can say that. And then, of course, the reunions with Sabbath.
Yep.
That Heaven and Hell reunion was massive. That thing made a lot of money. I mean, Dehumanizer may have been a little before its time. Maybe people weren't ready yet for Dio and Sabbath to come back. But by the time they did Heaven and Hell, people were ready for it. And it was massive.
I was still living up in Illinois when that Heaven and Hell was going on. And they never came nowhere close. They never came nowhere close.
Yeah, we got it twice in the Dallas area. And great shows. I was lucky I was able to be there for them. And I saw Ronnie, you know, I think maybe the Dream Evil tour. Yeah, that would have been the first tour I saw him on. And
they were supposed to be in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then when he got sick, they had canceled some shows and had rescheduled them or something.
I don't know about that one.
I think so. Because I think I was going to try to go to a Chicago trip to the Chicago show. And
I don't know.
I think they canceled some shows because when he got sick.
Well, of course, Iommi had his bout of cancer as well. But I think that's when Ozzy was with him.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel lucky too that I actually got to see Ozzy, Geezer, and Iommi together, because all those Ozfest reunions, I didn't go to those. But I did get to see the original set. Bill Ward wasn't there, but God bless the man. I don't think he could have physically done it at that point. So I feel blessed that I got to see both Dio and Ozzy with Sabbath. I still think Dio Sabbath is better, but it's hard to say that because you can't be better than Paranoid and War Pigs and Iron Man and Black Sabbath, the song. Those songs are what made heavy metal. So it's hard to say that the Dio era is better than the Ozzy era because the Ozzy era is what created everything.
Yeah.
So, although, you know, so it's hard to compare. I don't know. Maybe they should have changed the name of it to Heaven and Hell back when Ronnie joined originally and just left it at that. Who knows what legacy that would have left behind.
Exactly. Well, and then we come to May 10th of 2010. Where were you at?
I have no idea.
When you heard that Ronnie died.
I don't remember offhand. I think I saw it on Facebook. I remember.
I was sitting at my kitchen table up in Illinois. I used to roll my own cigarettes. I was rolling my cigarettes for the day, drinking my coffee, watching the news, the Today Show, and here it comes on the Today Show. I had a TV up. The TV was up in the corner of the, close to the ceiling on a mount, the old piece of shit TV for the kitchen. I just sat there and looked at it. Was like, I can't believe it.
Well, I don't really think that it was a shock to me because he'd been so sick. I mean, you know, everybody knew he had cancer and he died in Houston, actually.
It was just, I know. It was just so quick.
Yeah.
It was just, 7 months? He got diagnosed in November and was dead in May.
Well, I know Naomi and Geezer made a point that if he would have went to the doctor, they could have probably found it and cured it, but he refused to go to the doctor because he was, you know, on tour and didn't want to mess up the tours and stuff. But
yeah, if they could have caught it early.
I think Geezer was one of the ones that finally encouraged him to go to the doctor. So
yeah,
good sign. If you feel like shit, go to the doctor. Because you never know what might be wrong.
Exactly.
But yeah, I don't remember. I remember more when Lemmy passed away. I remember that big thing, but Ronnie, it was kind of like bittersweet because I knew it was coming. And it was a sad moment, but you know, it just seemed like it was one of those that was inevitable at that stage.
And then a couple months later, Peter Steele from Type O Negative, he died like 2 months later.
And that was the second time he died.
Huh?
You don't remember the whole story with Peter Steele? They posted on Type O Negative's webpage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And some chick supposedly thought he was dead and killed herself, is the urban legend.
Oh.
So he offed himself falsely once. And a lot of people wasn't sure he was really dead this last time, but I guess he really is.
It's been 11 years.
It's been 11 years, so he's gone. Sad to say. That was another good guy.
Yeah, that's another story too. That's another episode too.
But Ronnie's one of my biggest influences. I talked earlier today that I think he's probably the best singer of the metal genre, honestly. I mean, he might not have had the scream, you know, of Bruce Dickinson or the growly, you know, whatever's of Halford, but Ronnie was the best.
Do you ever watch any of them reaction videos?
No.
Well, there's this opera singer girl, and she's got a YouTube channel called The Charismatic Voice. She absolutely loves Ronnie James Dio, boy.
I should tell you something right there.
She's always listening to doing a episode on Ronnie, different songs. She's done a few on Peter Steele too, which is sort of cool. She loves him too.
But yeah, I you know, Dickinson, Halford, and Dio are probably my top three. But I think I have to put Ronnie at the top. honestly do.
Just a totally different voice than anything in metal.
Yes.
Very unique.
Very unique. And, you know, took his singing very seriously, and he never went, he never screamed, he never growled, you know, he never fell for, well, that Angry Machine album, yeah, he may have fell for the modern times, but it didn't change his voice. You know, he didn't come in and start doing all these overdubs or,
yeah, trying to sound different.
Trying to sound it, he sounded like Ronnie. He just changed his music up. And 1996, 95 was a dark period for our kind of metal. It just was,
exactly.
You know, I actually believe that Halford coming back to Priest and Dickinson and Adrian Smith back to Maiden is sort of what started to save it, because they all went back to play in big venues again. And, you know, Ronnie going back with Sabbath, you know, again, playing big, huge venues again, because I guarantee you, poor Black Sabbath sure weren't selling out much with Tony Martin as their singer. And again, I love those albums. Said it once, say it again. If you haven't checked out Headless Cross, that's a great Black Sabbath album.
Yeah, I'll have to put that on my list. I've heard it before, but I haven't heard it in a long time. So,
and, you know, I always defend Tony Iommi for keeping the name, but, you know, hindsight's 2020. Maybe he should have changed the name of the band, but it's all Black Sabbath. It's still Iommi's sound.
Yeah.
No matter who's singing.
Exactly.
That's just like Ronnie. No matter what band he was in, Rainbow, Sabbath, Dio band, it was Ronnie. You can lump all those songs, all those bands into one, and it's all Ronnie to me.
Exactly. Definitely. Big fan for sure.
Well,
you got anything else, brother?
Yeah, I was going to mention the book came out.
Oh,
you know, we heard that, yeah. Ronnie was putting out an autobiography, so I bought it off the Kindle, which is where I read all my books. And I guess Wendy wrote in the beginning, well, you know, Ronnie was writing this and got sick. Subnote, I heard an interview from, actually, it was the Angry Machines tour. Ronnie was talking about, I'm writing a book. I'm covering everything. So he was writing the book in the 90s, but it never got finished, apparently.
Exactly.
So I think in the notes, I forget where she said it left off. But anyway, I'm in this book. I'm going to town. And, you know, he's got the Dio band together, and he's pretty much trashing on Blackmore and Iommi at that point, which I thought was sort of weird, because, you know, later on he kind of, you know, he had good ties with both of them. But so as we get to going, you know, we get to where Vivian leaves the band, and, you know, where Craig Goldie comes in, and the next chapter he's talking about Claude Schnell. I hope I'm not saying his name wrong, wherever he's
at.
Claude Schnell, I believe, is the French. He's French, I think.
Schnell, I think, he came, German.
I don't know. I think he's from France. You can look it up. Maybe French Canadian. Anyway, so the chapter's talking about him coming to Ronnie and saying, you know, Journey's offered me a deal and are thinking of taking it. And he's like, no, I want to keep this band together. You know, I didn't want Vivian to leave. And I know I haven't treated y'all guys, you know, like equals, but that next album, you know, which was Dream Evil, I'm going to make sure you get a keyboard solo, and, you know, we're going to make this right. And he said, you know, my keyboard player is still with me. And, you know, as we go on to the next chapter, and it just ended. And that was the end of the book. It ended basically before Dream Evil.
Really?
That was the end. So I understand he passed away, but I thought somebody was going to finish writing
it. Yeah, that's what I heard too. That there, yeah, new info.
There's not any. There isn't anything in that book that I didn't already know, really.
Well, honestly, I think that's why they're pushing that. They're pushing it big. I get ads for it all the time on Facebook.
Well, you know, there's a lot of his early years when he was a child. I read a lot of biographies on, you know, musicians and wrestlers. That's kind of my thing. And I'm not real interested a lot of times in what they did as little kids. And, you know, I'm more interested in when they get like into high school and start, you know, with their music and their first bands. And that's kind of what I skipped to. And Ronnie did a good job of jumping on up pretty quick to where he was in his own bands and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a good read, but it just is really, it kind of leaves you on a cliffhanger. Because I want to read all about how
him because
Sabbath got back together. And
yeah, there's what 10, 11 more years after that. Yeah.
But it's not there, you know. Which I guess he never got that far to writing it. I don't know. Wendy said that a lot of it, he would handwrite it in his beautiful handwriting and give it to him and they'd type it up. And I guess he just never got it finished. So sort of a letdown, but I don't know how you can be upset when a man who, you know, feel is an idol has passed away and they put out a book about him. But maybe they should have put a little warning label on it, you know, that it's not the full story, but they get you to right there. And then
that's the thing. That's why they're pushing it. Like there was added stuff to it. Like they spent all this time putting all this extra.
Well, they stopped it. They stopped it as soon as before you got the Dream Evil. It would have been on the Sacred Heart tour. That's where it sort of comes to an end. So you miss a lot in the book. You know, I'm still kind of mysteries left for me is why the hell did Craig Goldie keep coming and going? You know, what was up with that? You know, and I don't really know why Vinny left the two times he did. You know, again, they all mentioned money was part of, you know, why Vivian left and why they all eventually left. You know, Jimmy Bain came and gone a couple times. So, yeah, the book's sort of a letdown to me, but I can't trash it. Sort of a letdown. I wanted to read especially more about how him and Sabbath got back together two times. We didn't get any of that, you know. And you could tell he still had resentment toward Iommi and even Blackmore.
Then,
at that point of his life, yeah. You know, and again, I've read where he reached out to Richie Blackmore to try to do some kind of a rainbow reunion, and it never went anywhere. But did you know this? Blackmore actually has a new version of Rainbow, and they actually put out a live album. So that's something that fans of Dio might have an interest in. There's actually a live Rainbow album that Blackmore put out a couple years ago.
Oh, cool. Well, you got anything else?
That's all I got on it.
Well, I guess that's it for Mr. Ronnie James Dio. So thanks for listening, everybody. And we will talk at you next time. And stay evil, everybody.
This is your